Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So as the weather's cooling down, especially as we get into these winter months, it is becoming boot season. And Jen and I talk a lot about the benefits of being barefoot or wearing barefoot shoes, like Vivo barefoot shoes. And one of the reasons we love Vivo is that they have shoes for every occasion, especially boots for during these cold months. They have boots that can help keep your feet warm regardless of where you are, like when we go to Minnesota and we have to deal with the snowy weather. Or if you're trying to go on hikes, especially aggressive hikes, they even have boots that can dress up to any outfit so that they can hold the standard for your outfit regardless of where you're going or what you're doing, and you can still get those barefoot benefits because these boots are still made with thin bottoms, flexible bottoms, and the wide toe area so you can gain the strength and mobility in your feet that is necessary to really optimize movement throughout the entire body. We talk about fascia during this episode, and our fascial planes and our fascia run all the way into the bottom of our feet, and it truly is the foundation upon which we move. So if you're looking to get your feet into a pair of these Vivo boots or add to your collection, regardless of what they're for or what occasion they're for, we have a 25% code that Vivo gave us for the end of the year coming into the holiday season. It is a great time to grab them. So if you use code TOB25 at checkout, you'll get 25% off your entire order. Head down to the link in the show notes and make sure you use code TOB, like the optimal body, TOB25 at checkout. All right, let's head into the episode. Okay, today talking about myofascial trains. And this is funny when you brought this topic up or someone had requested this. Brought it up. These myofascial slings. It's funny because it's one of the things that I think you were really studying or taking courses on when we met.
Oh, that's funny.
Or you had just done some courses and were talking to me about it. And I remember you shared, you know, some of the study guides that you had or whatever with me about it. And that was my first introduction into what a myofascial sling is. And I think they were really popularized by Anatomy Trains.
Yes.
Or that's one of the
Tom Myers,
you know, big courses that talks about these myofascial slings. And what are they? Mm-hmm. Essentially, the premise is that our fascia, is this tissue that essentially covers everything in our body, from our muscles to our nerves to organs. Mm-hmm. The premise that they're all connected throughout mm-hmm. the body and that they all are one continuous like sheath, essentially, a network of this fascial connective tissue.
And so based on that, the theory is then, well, then they work together to transmit forces and across the body. And yep. if you work this area, whether it's soft tissue related or strength related, you're going to help to affect another part of the body or release tension in another part of the body, yeah. right? So we want to dive into, well, what is the research really saying that we have to date right now, which I will say that I think we need a little bit more research in this area as well to help understand, because fascia is also highly innervated. So rather than just talking about the structure yeah. of fascia, I think it'd be really interesting also to look into like, well, how does the nervous system connect when we touch on one part to the other part, or we work one part to another part? So I think there's more research that needs to be done, but we'll go through the current research that we have in terms yeah. of what we know today and what is really factual, what really helps, and then what is maybe not as factual.
And I think this is pertinent because you go to all sorts of providers, especially soft tissue workers, and they say, oh, you've got this pain in, say, your low back. Oh, well, that's I'm sensing or I'm feeling restrictions in your fascia, in your upper back and around your hips. And once we get that to loosen up and get you more freedom in those areas, it will improve your back pain. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's the premise, this regional interdependence, you know, it's a term, a physical therapy school term, that like, hey, what's happening above and below is going to affect the area. And we talk about that all the time, mm-hmm. admittedly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what some people tap on with this premise of, oh, the fascia is connected. So if you're restricted in one of these areas, it's going to affect this area.
A quick note on the topic of fascia. We have to talk about fascia and hydration because they go together. You're not just water, but you're movement, energy, flow. And when you're only drinking plain water, your body might not actually absorb it efficiently. And that's where electrolytes come in and why Dom and I use Element every single day. Adding electrolytes helps your body hydrate at a cellular level, keeping your tissue supple, your fascia gliding smoothly, and your muscles and joints moving freely. So if you want to feel more fluid, less stiff, and truly hydrated from the inside out, don't just drink water, but add Element, especially if you are focusing on less ultra-processed food and more movement in general. This is where getting your body truly hydrated so that your fascia has the ability to slide and glide and not feel so stuck down and stiff. Highly recommend getting Element. No BS, no added sugar. And you can get a free sample pack with every purchase when you go to drinkelement.com/optimal. That's drinkelement.com/optimal. And you'll get a free sample pack so you can explore all the different flavors that they have available with your purchase. Okay, let's get back in. Yeah. And you might hear like, oh, I'm in like my shoulders really messed up. I need to work on my left shoulders really, you know, wonky. So I need to work on my right hip. I think that's how you kind of hear about it too. Like this cross-sectional areas.
Slings.
Yeah. Or like I'm going to roll the bottom of my foot and it's going to release my hamstring. So it's like, okay, what can we say is potentially happening when you do feel changes across the body in different ways? And is that truly based on that fascial sling? And what we do know is that, you know, is there a continuous fascial network throughout?
Are these actually things?
Right. And yes, the short answer, yes.
Yes. But,
you know, you will go dissect a body and you'll see how the fascia is connected in these ways. And it's actually really cool. And I think that's what's cool about, I know if you go to, I've heard of friends going to the Anatomy Trains workshop and actually dissecting and being able to see these fascial trains, which I think is a really cool part to be able to do. But what we have to understand is that dissection of a body is not the same as functional load and capacity in our everyday.
Yeah, we're talking about a few different things here. And one, do they exist? Yes, fascia is a thing. It is all connected.
Yes.
That is all true.
Mm-hmm.
There was this big systematic review of all these different studies, most done on cadavers and cadaver dissection. And they list off the specific lines that they studied, the superficial back line, the back functional line, the front functional line, the spiral line, the lateral line, superficial front line. There was pretty strong, moderate evidence for most of those. It said there's mixed evidence for the lateral line and no verified transitions, which I didn't study as deeply as you, but I'm guessing the transitions are from one area of the body to another.
Mm-hmm.
There's a transition section where the fascia kind of crosses over or is integrated with one another. So the superficial front line was the only one that didn't get any real love in this systematic review. But you and I have both done cadaver dissections and seen this in the lab. And yes, it's very believable that fascia is connected and it runs all the way throughout our body.
I think what's disappointing, like in, at least for me going through PT school, is like we cut through all the fascia, right? Because we want to get to all the individual muscles. So it's like we're really going through the fascia in order to piece out every individual muscle and really be able to look at it. So, you know, I personally haven't done the dissection where we look at just trying to trace the fascia and just trying to, but what we have to go by is the research that we have, right? So there is some continuity with the fascial lines and being able to connect, but not all of them. And so are some of them based more on, well, the theory of how they would run together based on, we know that fascia is connected. So, you know, so, well, it would just make sense then if this connects to this, this connects to that, and we can keep going down the body that way.
And so then the next point we want to get into has to do with the force transmission. This is where people start getting more into the claims of like, oh, well, if your fascia is restricted in this area, then you're going to see restrictions because it's going to impact the force transmission into a different area.
Right.
And there have been a few different studies that look at this both on a cadaver and in vivo, meaning in live living subjects, which We didn't look super deep into the methods on how exactly they're measuring this force transmission, but what they showed was that in the cadaver lab, if you do put tension into one area of the fascia, like, yes, you will see some force transmission across fascial links, but compared to the in vivo magnitude of the force transmission, it was a lot smaller in living breathing subjects and a lot more variable. Mm-hmm. So you saw a lot of variability based on how much transmission. They basically would do this by having someone activate or try to isolate activation in one muscle and see if they can measure force transmission on a different area of that myofascial sling. Mm-hmm. And so a lot more variable and a lot lower magnitude in live patients or live subjects.
Which is like, this is where I go back to, a lot of people will pull up a diagram or a skeleton and have different connective resistance bands, right? And say, oh, see, if I tug here, see how it's going to move tension over here on this side of the body, where that's kind of looking at the cadaver, where nothing is moving, nothing is really actually doing anything.
Isolated. You're able to isolate things a lot better.
Right. You don't have a nervous system involved. You don't have different components, right? And so, it's really easy to be able to visually see how one connects to another in a body that's not living. But when we put that into a body that's living, that's where it becomes a lot more complicated, because we as humans are so complicated.
And we're so different.
We're so different.
It points that out in how the magnitude is, or the variability in the living subjects was so different. Mm-hmm. Like, again, everyone's different. If I flex my quad based on my internal anatomy, it's going to impact up or down the chain a lot different than the next person.
And even genetically, we can have different tissue based on laxity or decreased laxity based on our genetic factors and our genetic code. So there's so many factors, I think, that goes into an actual living
being. So kind of the takeaway from that is, like, okay, these concepts are good to have in mind.
Yeah.
But again, when you're working with an individual, you can't just take that concept and say, oh, you're restricted here, so that's really going to impact you here.
Right.
We have to look at them and do the functional tests on them. And maybe that restriction they have has nothing to do with their ankle pain or whatever, you know? So again, taking each individual as an individual should be the approach. And you're going to notice that that's a little bit of a theme here.
Right. So fascial links exist, and we know that. That's real anatomy, right? But the continuity and it just doesn't mean that it's an automatic cause. It just doesn't mean that, if we work here, like you said, that's going to affect that. And just because the tissues connect doesn't mean that pain necessarily follows that same exact line. And maybe in some people, you know, it does. But we also have to go to, let me go back to my foot example, releasing the hamstring. I have felt this in a workshop that I've done. We did this in a physical therapy continuing education course. I don't remember which one, but we rolled the bottom of the foot and it was like, oh, see, I have improved hamstring mobility now. But was that a nervous system, you know, systemic?
You're kind of jumping ahead to our next point.
Is that a nervous system systemic load where I touched something on my body, mechanically gave my receptors some information to cause relaxation throughout my body and got this improved range of motion?
Yeah. And that ties perfectly right into our next point, which has to do with clinical outcomes and pain, more related to doing soft tissue mobilizations, doing myofascial release techniques, manual release techniques. And kind of what you said, there's a lot of evidence that shows doing hands-on technique, whether it's myofascial releases, manual release techniques, there's pretty strong to moderate evidence to show that we're getting increases in range of motion, that we're getting reduction in pain in the short term after these techniques are applied. And we talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. Hands-on therapy, manual therapy is very powerful, and it can very quickly change someone's perception of pain, tightness, restriction, movement. So that's why they should be used. But what does that mean? And you touched on it in your example. Mm-hmm. Are we actually releasing? That is something that, you know, bothers us to no end when someone says, hey, we're going to release this fascia. We're going to, because you're really not getting the fascia to just
let go.
Release or let go. It doesn't make sense. We're not
unlock or something.
Breaking any we're not breaking any scar tissue. We're not like releasing myofascial adhesions in one treatment. What we're doing is just what you said in your hamstring and foot example. We're speaking to the nervous system, and our nervous system is very powerful. Like in the foot, the nerves that run into the foot are the same nerves and nerve branches that run in the back of the leg and the hamstring. So if we're giving that input, we're probably getting a pretty regional and global effect all the way up that nerve chain. And so we're going to get the general relaxation. We're going to get the release of some happy chemicals in our brain that say like, oh, this feels good. I should relax. We're going to get increased localized blood flow. And just the hands-on therapeutic connection you have with someone is very powerful to get you to relax. So yes, all of these things combined are going to get some of those changes in range of motion and pain modulation that we see in these studies.
And going back to what I said at the very beginning as well, that fascia is just very highly innervated.
Yeah.
Right? So we're, everything we do, we're talking to the nervous system. That's how we're moving, living beings. And that's what makes us different than being a cadaver or resistance bands, right? Is because we have this nervous system involvement, and that could be affected not just from movement and restrictions. That is affected by how we sleep, by our nutrition, by our hydration, by our stress levels, by so many other factors that play a role in our life rather than just what's happening in the body. And I think we have to continue to remember that. And I think that's why it's important to say it. So, you know, we're looking more at that, you know, it, yes, get some work, manual work done. We are not against doing manual work. We think that it can have such a great effect on that pain modulation and being able to get someone back to feeling something different so that they can move and load their bodies in the ways that they want to again. So I think it's so important to be able to do this. I think we just need to understand that it might not be creating the effect that someone is necessarily saying, this is exactly what we're doing. We are releasing fascia. We are by reducing the tension in your hamstring, we're going to help to unlock what's happening up at your shoulder. Well, maybe it can help, right? But maybe we also just work on the area that you're having that restriction and that tension as well. Like I think it's just a hard stretch to 100%, based on the research that we have right now, be able to say one part of the area is for sure going to affect another.
Yeah, don't allow it to become your crutch. Don't allow it to become something you rely upon to get out of your pain. If you're going to a provider that's all they do and they are like this messiah of myofascial release techniques or fascial work and that's all they do, you know, their business model relies on you believing them so that you continue to come back in to get the treatment and are never able to not have the treatment. Mm-hmm. Look for the providers who have the more comprehensive approach that incorporate movement and exercise along with their manual treatments. And that's what we always advocate for. And even the studies and the meta-analysis, mm-hmm. the main meta-analysis that we looked at calls for blind, like it said there was a potential high risk of bias. It was poor blinding, inconsistent protocols, very small sample sizes, and heterogeneity across the studies, which essentially means they just like studied a lot of different populations and they had to pool all those studies into the meta-analysis. So it kind of gives that meta-analysis fairly low power. And it says we need to have longer term studies, which it's hard to do long-term studies doing techniques like this. And also, if you do a study, my hypothesis would be that they'll see an initial benefit, but once you stop the treatment, you know, there won't be as much of a lasting effect. That would be my hypothesis, at least.
Yeah. So now let's go into some performance, right? Because, and I myself love some of these exercises of how the body works together. So let's actually look at the research of what I'm telling people to use as well, because I have myself used some. You know, when we're talking about targeting the myofascial slings to improve strength and carryover on different sides of the body, and really we're talking about performance. So what is really happening if I, for example, something that I have shared a lot is like I'm going to hold on to a band with one hand and then the opposite leg that's in front, I'm going to step and do a lunge and then I'm going to row as I stand up. And because I am stepping back and lunging, as I push from the ground to stand up, I'm using one glute. As I row, I'm using the opposite lat. So in theory, then I'm using that oblique posterior sling that's connecting that glute into my lat to help build that connection in that posterior chain and get someone to feel something different. Also, I love it because we are rotational beings. We use asymmetrical movement every step that we take. So getting someone back and used to that kind of patterning neurologically makes sense to me. But again, let's see what what the evidence is saying.
And the thing that I think is funny about myofascial slings and needing to have a name for everything and saying like, oh, there's the slings are there and the fascia is in those orientations because of how we move as humans, because of how our muscles operate. Like we rotate. That's why we have these spiral and these oblique slings. We are upright beings. That's why we have all the lines on the back, the front, and the sides to help give us stability and to help our muscles do the movements that we do as humans. So it's not like, it's like a chicken or the egg conversation. What came first? Like, oh, well, we started moving in a certain way, so our tissues as a human species
have adapted.
In this way.
I mean, it's the same thing going back to a tight IT band. You need a tight IT band. It literally keeps our hips and our body moving forward rather than falling side to side. That is why we have such intense tension in that long, thick IT band. So what we're seeing is that there are some small randomized and some experimental trials testing this sling targeting interventions where, again, we're doing kind of like that lunge row that I talked about, using that posterior oblique swing for strengthening drills or some spiral line coordination where we're rotating in different exercises. But the problem is so many of these are small pilot studies and they might show some modest improvements in specific movement parameters where we're looking at gait, where we're looking at stride, where we're looking at coordination. But again, the effect sizes are so small, the findings are inconsistent. And this is what is really important to point out is the replication, because how one therapist is going to coach you and what they're looking for and specifically what they want to see change in someone is going to be different in a different clinician. And that's why replication and looking at some of these studies is so hard to do. We all cue a little different. We all recommend something a little different. And so like, what exactly are we looking at then when it comes to the outcome?
And I think something important to point out about some of these initial randomized control trials or experimental trials is a lot of them are done on recreational athletes. Not necessarily
the
athletes,
everyday person.
The everyday person, just recreational exercisers versus elite athletes. And when we're talking about research, we often are comparing in a way that we're looking for what does the absolute best versus, and as a human, as a recreational human, are we necessarily looking for, I need to do the exercise that is getting me the absolute most strength, that is going to help me get my max squat or my max bench or improve my vertical the most? Most of this research is done on elite athletes because that's where the money is. We're trying to train elite athletes to get better in their sport. So a lot of the times I would say, what matters to you? You know, it says here that these studies help explain why sling-specific training rarely outperforms well-designed strength and power programs in trials, because there's so much research behind strength and power training, especially at the elite and Olympic levels. And I would argue that a lot of that training includes things like lunges, things like lateral lunges. So again, you're going to be working these different fascial slings anyway. It's just not using these more unique styles of exercise that you kind of outlined with the row lunge example. But if you're a recreational mover or exerciser, what matters most to you? Are you wanting to do power cleans and heavy lunges and heavy deadlifts? Or are you wanting to do something that just helps you feel like you're moving better and getting stronger and more confident in your body? And which one of those helps you do that?
Right. And so I don't think like this is a bad thing to be able to train. So again, we're going back to like our functional everyday movement of the everyday person. We want to be able to walk well. We want to be able to feel comfortable in our bodies when we're hiking, when we're running, or we're chasing a kid, you know, yeah. Like we want to feel a little bit more ease. And this is where I go back to training. Some of these different types of sling type work that gets you stronger across the body, that gets you stronger in rotation, that gets you more comfortable rotating, that makes you yeah. feel more powerful in being able to push a band fast across your body with the other leg in front, or take a, what are some of the things, like taking a landmine and then punching it up really fast in a lunge type position. Like that's the sling type oblique yeah. rotational work, right? A lot of those are so great, I think, to be able to train. And no, this is my personal opinion that I'm going to say, because yeah. now we're going to feel better in ease with our body when we're doing our everyday tasks, cleaning our house, you know, getting kids ready, different things, that reaching back in our car to help control what's happening in the back. Like there's different instances we're going to be rotating and we're going to want to feel strong and confident in our body. And that's where I go back and saying some of this could potentially help with carryover and having you feel less strain.
And would what you just said with that, like, powerful landmine press outperform someone just doing like a strict shoulder press exercise or a half kneeling shoulder press or something like that?
If we're looking just for shoulder strength?
If you're looking just at the research, probably not. Or even at injury or preparing someone for life or whatever, maybe not. But again, what's more enjoyable to you? What are you going to enjoy to do and be consistent with? That's the thing that you should choose. I think that we get too bogged down in looking at which exercise is the absolute best, or that's what people on social media like to do. This research study just came out saying this form of exercise is the absolute best for X, Y, or Z, and they try to say that that means everyone should be doing it. Well, no, not everyone should be doing it, because Joe Blow absolutely hates doing that, and Susie absolutely dreads,
doesn't feel good,
you know, doesn't feel good doing those things. So find which one works best for you. There is some evidence on training these slings and showing benefit in movement and power and strength. There's shows benefit with using manual techniques to modulate pain and range of motion. Mm-hmm. And yes, they exist.
Yeah.
You know, those are kind of the takeaways from this mm-hmm. whole episode in showing how using these concepts of myofascial slings can actually be applied.
Thanks so much for joining us. That was really fun. And I hope that you got to learn and take a different perspective on things. Not ever saying that it's bad, but it's, you know, something that can be applied and something that we use in Gen Health as well when we're talking about different movement and getting you to feel different things. So if you haven't checked out Gen Health yet, know that you can always start a free trial. And as our podcast guest, you can use code OPTIMAL to get started on the entire platform for just $20.